Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio, and we are here to discuss an exciting Tottenham Hotspur win and a less-than-exciting transfer deadline day. Surely driven by Daniel Levy's chief habits, it is a bare-bones podcast tonight, so it is just me and Brian Ashlock. Brian, how's it going?
It's going great. It's still warm in Florida.
Yeah, it's what temperatures are you suffering from?
It was like when the Midwest part of the U.S. was having their polar vortex stuff, it was about like 55 here in Florida, which is, and I know no one will believe this, is very cold. But yeah, other than that, it's fine.
Well, that's good, because right now in New York City, as we speak, it is 13 degrees, but apparently it feels like 2 degrees. So that's something to feel really cool about.
Gross. It's almost as cold as Daniel Levy's heart on deadline day.
Exactly. But we'll get to deadline day in a minute. Let's talk about something fun at first, or at least fun eventually.
Was it fun?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Tottenham played Watford on a
Wednesday. Day
earlier this week. Wednesday, yes. That took me a second to remember what day we actually played them on. Tottenham played Watford. It was an intensely frustrating game for a long period of time, wasn't it, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of the ball, and we had a lot of possession, and
we were comfortably the better team, and yet we were losing until the 80th minute.
Well, you know, I mean, look, we conceded on a set piece, which has just kind of been a thing this year. And, you know, Hugo Lloris comes for the corner kick and gets caught kind of in no man's land when he can't get to the ball, and Cathcart gets his header in. Even after the goal, I really thought, you know, we, like you said, we were the better team. We dominated possession. We dominated the ball. Danny Rose was, you know, our main attacking outlet. He, you know, we were pretty much doing everything through him. And then the only other bright spot in the attack was Heung-min Son. Fernando Llorente conspired to miss like quite a few good chances. I think at the start of the second half, he heads right at Foster, then knees the rebound over the bar, and then there's another header that he puts just wide of the post. You know, it looked like it was going to be just one of those games that kind of continued the run we were on, where we were close but not close enough.
Well, I think there are two things that helped in this game, and certainly the game winner was the thing that helped the most, which was Fernando Llorente scoring possibly the slowest goal I've ever seen.
It's definitely up there with that like Harry Kane looping header from like 20 yards out, not 20 yards out, but like 15 yards out against Arsenal.
Yes, it's one of those two, and this one was significantly more stupid because at least that one was in a top corner.
Yeah, no, Llorente's just, the ball hit him in the head and it traveled back across goal. And I don't know if Ben Foster got his feet tangled or just was moving the wrong direction when Llorente made contact, but yeah, that was...
Well, I think there's two things that are going on here. I think Llorente, for whatever else you want to say about him, he did hit that across the goal. And
right.
I think Foster thought that was going wide because you could see him sort of break at the last second. I don't think there's any way Foster was getting to that. I think that was far too out of his range for him to do anything to stop it, which is a credit to Llorente. But this game is sort of, let's talk about Llorente first, because there's two players I really want to focus on here, and Llorente is one of them. You know, we've been saying that we're going to rely on Llorente while Harry Kane's out. Now, some of this is a byproduct of Lucas Moura is not fit, and more importantly, Heung-min Son was out on international duty for his second international tournament of the year. I mean, I don't think any Spurs fans are super happy with Llorente's play, but say what you want, he got us 3 points this past week. How would you evaluate Llorente's play up top for Spurs? You could either speak generally or about this game in particular, but after the Watford match, how do you feel about it?
I mean, I don't feel great about it, but, you know, look, it's a results-based business, and, you know, at the end of the day, he didn't score an own goal this game, and he did score a goal for Spurs, so...
And he kind of set up the other goal, sort
yeah,
of?
Yeah, like, he got the... I don't know if that counts as an assist, if the other team bounces it off your shins, but we can say that's an assist, that's fine. If Tom Carroll gets an assist for some of that stuff to Gareth Bale, then... Llorente gets an assist for that. It's not something I want to see in the long term, and I don't enjoy Fernando Llorente playing up top for Spurs. It's very much like when teams sub on Peter Crouch or an Andy Carroll, and teams are like, oh well, now we'll just make crosses into the box, and that's, you know, that's our offense now, and really so much of the good stuff that Spurs have done in the past few seasons has been like intricate interchanges around the top of the box, using Harry Kane to pull defenders out of the middle and allowing, you know, players like Son and Lamella and Dele and Eriksen to run into the spaces that are created and get shots off. And so a lot of the fluidity of our attack is destabilized by the presence of Llorente, and we change up our attacking patterns so much, and so it's not enjoyable to watch. And then also I don't think it works the best for some of our best players. Having Son back in this game really worked out well, because at least in theory Llorente's target man abilities and ability to do knockdown headers and flick-ons and stuff are something that Son can thrive on. We didn't see it as much in the second half because Watford started to drop a little deeper, but at least early in the first half we saw some instances where Son got in behind, and there was one time I think even actually where Llorente played a pretty nice kind of through ball or ball over the top to Son early in the first half. And so, you know, you can see why Pochettino is going to persist with it versus playing Janssen or playing Troy Parrott or Keziah Sterling, who's now no longer at the club. But I'm not really excited for the next month and a half of this.
Well, that's a negative assessment of Harry. Haven't you seen Harry Kane, like, sort of squatting around with...
That's true. He's on Instagram doing workout videos, so he must be close.
I mean, there's something with you could see it in the first half of the game that we played without Kane, the first game we played without Kane with Llorente up top. Spurs kept trying to do their air raid offense and, you know, just those quick vertical transitions, and, you know, Llorente just wasn't fast enough to make it work. And we've kind of laid off of that in the game since, and I don't know about you, but watching this game, watching some of our other games, like, I keep thinking to myself, Harry would have gotten a shot there. And a lot of that's down to, like, Llorente just can't latch on to these, not even, like, the vertical, you know, passing or whatever, but just, like, lots of out passes and through balls. He just can't latch on to them like Harry can. And you combine that with the fact that, you know, him dishing it off, doing hold-up play, he just doesn't seem to be able to retain the ball or pass very well. That seems to be a fairly recent drop-off in his game. It's very frustrating to watch.
I mean, and we've been fortunate in that this run of teams that we've played, you know, in the league at least, has been relatively poor. You know, we obviously didn't get fortunate in, you know, some of the cup competitions. But, you know, we've had Fulham in the league. This was Watford. We've got Newcastle coming up. And after that, I'm not sure. But, I mean, you know, like, these are teams that are going to allow us to have the ball, and where Llorente's lack of movement and maybe kind of the unsteadiness of his first touch is not going to hurt us as much as if we're playing specifically on the counter, or we have to rely solely on that sort of air raid offense. So we've gotten lucky in that respect, but yeah, it really kind of looks like, you know, old, like, AVB Harry Redknapp Spurs where you have, you know, Peter Crouch up top and Raphael Vandevart or Clint Dempsey or whoever playing is.
Yeah, but it's not nearly that effective. I think that's the idea, and it just, like, Llorente doesn't seem to be able to execute it like Peter Crouch used to be able to.
Yeah, which is really weird because, I mean, we're talking about a player who, like, in his prime was, I think it's fair to say he was one of the top center forwards in Europe. Like, you know,
certainly one of the more effective big men in Europe. I mean,
certainly, yeah. And I mean, in terms of as a target man and in terms of his goal scoring at Athletic was excellent. And yeah, now it's time has really taken its toll on him, I guess.
Well, time and Bielsa, but
yeah, that probably didn't help any.
But, you know, he did have several productive years at Juventus. Now, you know, you could say what you want about, you know, the Italian league, but he had several productive years at Juve. He had, you know, honestly, he had a productive year or two at Swansea there. Like, it's not like he wasn't effective for in Cardiff. Yeah. Or in, yeah, in Wales, rather. But
Swansea.
Yeah, in Wales. But, you know, it's not like he wasn't effective there. This is fairly new for him.
And, I mean, I guess, I'm critical of him. Like, Spurs fans in general are critical of him. But, like, when you have a center forward like Harry Kane, who is going to play 90% of the minutes when he is healthy, I don't know what else what would be better for us in terms of a backup striker. Like,
no, Spurs have literally, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but Spurs have literally tried almost every approach. We have tried getting a young, interesting player off the continent from a lower league. We have tried getting a wily veteran in his last days. I mean, about the only thing we haven't tried is, like, making a serious run at making a guy like Sterling or Troy Parrott or someone from our academy really play, you know, understudy. I mean,
yeah.
There's not a lot. I always say that when people are saying, like, oh, Spurs should go get Batshuayi or some of these other guys, like, the thing that always strikes me is, like, even if Spurs are willing to pay some of their salary, like, you know, if you're a young guy who's heavily touted on the continent, like, let's use Batshuayi as an example, like, why would you come to Spurs to be an understudy to Harry Kane? Like, what's your best case scenario? You sort of, like, you either change positions, which a lot of these guys don't want to do, or you sort of shine at Spurs for a few years and get a move to a bigger club, and it's not like you're going to go to Real Madrid from being Spurs' backup striker. I guess there's a world in which Harry Kane gets sold in a couple of years, but I think, you know, regardless of what you think of Kane's longevity at Spurs, it's going to be longer than your average striker of his ability at Spurs would be. So it's, I don't know what the answer is. Probably we need to hit on some underrated lower leagues guy, but
yeah. And I mean, so, you know, in terms of where we're at in the squad that we have now, like, you know, Kaziah Sterling or Troy Parrott or whoever wasn't going to be a better option. And I suppose we'll come on to Vincent Janssen in the transfer portion of the show, but obviously he's not an option. And so we're left with kind of like Son and Lucas Moura are pseudo strikers. And then if we're going to utilize them, I guess we need to utilize Fernando Llorente at the same time just to give us, you know, some sort of target presence. And, you know, I mean, that's what we're left with. So I don't know. He hasn't been great, but it could have been. He could have been a lot worse.
So let's talk about let's make this a more upbeat conversation. The other player I want to talk about is Heung-min Son, Watford's natural predator. He destroys Watford every time we play them. For a while, he was the only team that he destroyed. But he was, I thought, for a guy just coming off an international tournament, I thought he was very lively, very good. He was creating lots of opportunities before he scored a hell of a hell of an equalizer in about the 80th minute.
He hit that so hard.
He did. I mean, he's very good, and he looked. It looked like he hadn't missed a step. And frankly, I don't know if you thought this, but he's certainly watching him. It was exactly like, oh, that's what we've been missing. That, like, someone who can run onto these balls and make these shots. Like, it doesn't feel like we've had, especially since Dele went down, we've had anyone who could really do that in our attack, or at least not with the degree he was able to. And he just looked like he was right on it. I guess long term, I'm a little worried about his fitness, but he certainly looked fit over 90 on Wednesday. Were you as thrilled as I was to see Son back in the lineup?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the question coming into the game was how fit was he going to be, and would he be, you know, could we get 30 minutes of him or out of him at the end of the game, or could we get, you know, 60 if he started, and he ended up going the whole game, and like you said, he looked fine for the entire match in terms of his fitness, and yeah, he's like you said, he's exactly what we were missing. Without Dele Alli and without Harry Kane, he is the best player on the team at getting shots out of, you know, out of running at the defense, out of picking up balls in space, out of, you know, just out of just creating goals out of nothing, and
just
and,
generally being a danger.
I mean, we saw, you know, how Watford's defense was terrified of him getting balls over the top, and they kept sitting deeper and sitting deeper and sitting deeper, and then of course they got the goal to go ahead, and that allowed them to sit even deeper in the second half. But you know, in the first half we were really pushed up high up the pitch, and we were trying to get Heung-min Son in behind, and that's just something that he offers that nobody else on the team does. I mean, Lucas Moura is very fast, but I do not think that him running at a goalkeeper or running at a central defender offers the same level of terror that Heung-min Son in that same sort of situation does.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've sort of, I think Moore has sort of revealed himself to be most effective this year as a ball carrier more than...
Remember, like, the second week of the season when we were like, Lucas Moura, Golden Ball winner, World Player of the Year.
It's going to score more goals than Harry Kane. Yes, that did not last very long. You are correct. Yeah, but I don't know. Like, Son just adds so much to this team, and it's just, God, it's really great to watch. And watch this transition coming up here. It's amazing to me that we got him when we did. Especially, no other teams were heavily linked with him. It was incredible. And
yeah, that was one of those weird out of the blue ones where it was like it was reported the day before, and then all of a sudden we were like, "Oh yeah, that's official. That's a thing that happened."
Oh, it's probably the weirdest transfer I've seen as a Spurs fan, and just that there was no drama and it was almost entirely locked up before we, you know, even heard about it. It was just it's just wild that we were able to get a player this good, and I think, you know, while I think that there are probably some Leverkusen fans or Bundesliga watchers who could have guessed that he'd be this good, I think we're in like the 99th percentile of what Son could have become for us. And it's really, really fun to watch. And I'm so glad we have him.
Absolutely. And especially right now when we need goal scoring, we need creative players, we need guys that can get their own shots. He's going to be huge for us in the next month, and he really needs to go on a run like he did in December, where he was like, what did he end up having? 7 goals in 6 games or something like that.
Well, he's off
like
to a good start.
Yeah, so that's the kind of run that Spurs as a club need from him for the next month until Kane comes back.
When Kane is going to be fine and just pick up where he left off, so...
And will not be, you know, playing still mostly injured and drag that injured leg all the way through the season and into the summer and so on.
I do think there is something to the fact that Kane was maybe not as hurt as we all thought he was, but that doesn't even if that's the case, we shouldn't assume he's going to be back to his old self when he comes. I mean, we saw what happened last year, especially given how quickly he pushed himself to get back.
Yeah. Exactly.
But let's cast our minds back to previous happier days at Spurs when we were in fifth place and really excited about transfer window days. I don't know, there's been a lot of nostalgia among Tottenham fans this year, and I understand it's driven largely because we have not bought anyone in literally a calendar year. We bought Lucas Moura a year ago today, or at least, a year ago today. It has been a year since we purchased anyone. Tottenham have still not purchased anyone. It's a little frustrating, but I am a little surprised at the level of nostalgia here, because as I see it, there is like one deadline day that was ever enjoyable as a Spurs fan, and that was the year we bought Van der Vaart at like the last possible minute. Like, since then, it is just like, oh, we missed out on this player or that player, or we bought someone like Moura, who we all sort of, it was a fait accompli, we all knew we were buying him. Transfer deadline day has not been a genuinely pleasant experience. I come up with very clever hashtags, like Moutinho by Midnight, and then they're out of date almost immediately, and it's incredibly frustrating.
I don't know. I think, you know, like, I don't think that.
I mean, and the I should say, Michael brought this up in our writers' room when we were talking about this earlier today. Like, the Sissoko has turned out into what Sissoko is, but the whole like Moussa Sissoko not taking Everton's phone calls was at least pretty funny at the time. So it's, I guess there's like a deadline day and a half that were pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, but I think my thing is like, I think deadline day is enjoyable not just because of like the signings that actually happen, but because of the rumors about things that may happen. And so that's why I think like a lot of the Harry Redknapp, Tottenham Hotspur, deadline day, those were at least interesting because Harry Kane, Harry Redknapp always had a ton of irons in the fire, and sometimes they wound up being Ryan Nelson and Louis Saha. But sometimes they wound up being like good stuff, like
Scott Parker
yeah.
or a
All
bank
right. Well,
account in
good stuff
Monaco.
is, yeah, good stuff is relative. That's fine. But you know, and then the AVB years were exciting because, you know, Spurs were entering into like a different like sort of era in the club,
And we were
and now
selling
we
our
were
best
talking.
player and buying lots of new players.
Yeah, and so, you know, like, but transfer windows in general have just been pretty blasé the last, well,
I don't know.
say.
Like, we were getting linked with some pretty lit names last summer, and then we didn't sign anybody.
Yeah, and so, like, yeah, that's, I don't know. I maybe that transfer window is boring in hindsight, but I don't recall it being that exciting at the time. But maybe that's because I was resolved to the fact that we were resigned to the fact that we weren't going to sign anybody. I don't know. But I feel like under Mauricio Pochettino, transfer season is just generally a lot less interesting.
Well, so we've been seeing a lot lately, and I think it is fair to say the club, somebody at the club is leaking the fact that like a lot of these that Spurs have the ability to sign some guys. Admittedly, they're always vague about which guys, but Spurs have the ability to sign some guys, and they just don't pass muster with Pochettino for whatever reason. I think what was the guy that Leicester signed this way, just on loan, but
T.
they
Elements.
yeah. So he was the like the latest one to actually have his name attached to it. And I think this is on the one hand some ass covering by the club to make themselves look a little better. Oh, we have very specific needs. Pochettino likes a small squad. We're not just going to buy people for the sake of buying people. And I think it's pretty clear you look at some of the punts we took in recent years, like Nkudu, Ng, Jansen to a Jansen, I'm not sure you'd call a punt, but you know, sort of a chance we took on another on a lower tier player. I think those have put Pochettino off that kind of a deal. But like I said, Jansen's a little different, and we'll get to him in a minute. But I think some of these like moves we've made have made Pochettino much less likely to be like, yeah, fuck it, let's sign this Bowen kid or whatever his name is from Hull City.
Well, it just really feels like, you know, kind of the whole Arsene Wenger passed up the opportunity to sign so and so
Okay,
sort
we're
of
like
thing.
not quite there. Ryan Sessegnon needs to have a better year for us to say that, but
I mean, but like, I mean, we're getting into that territory where it's like, oh yeah, we could have signed Tielemans, or we could have signed. There's money available that if we had seen, if there was a player that Pochettino wanted, we could have done it. But there was nobody that he wanted, and I'm like, you can't tell me that there's nobody out there that he didn't want. And like, okay, maybe we're talking about like the players that he actually wants aren't available or whatever. But I just
It seems like
the
Pochettino doesn't want to get any short-term solutions, which I would be more sympathetic to if our entire squad didn't look like, you know, the hospital scene in Gone with the Wind. It's
Yeah,
like
we're in a fucking MASH unit. Like, the thing is just like the other thing about Pochettino is, to me, the January window represents a good time for Pochettino to do business because what we know about players coming into his system is it takes a while for them to adjust. And so that was one of the things that, you know, we talked about with Lucas coming in when he did. There wasn't a lot of pressure on him to play because Spurs were basically already guaranteed top four. We didn't need him to come in and step in right away. He could come, he could learn the system, and we saw, you know, how he benefited from that early in the season. And now, admittedly, the performances have kind of tailed off a little bit recently, but January could be a time where Spurs could do smart business, where you could bring in a player like, you know, like Rabiot or a fullback or, you know, any number of different players and just get them accustomed to the team and the system by rotating them in low pressure situations and get them to train with the team for 6 months and then have a full preseason and then be ready to contribute, you know, next year.
Or just start signing guys, like if you want to take a punt on a guy like Jack Clark or like Madison, if you want to go back in time, like get them signed up now, you know, so you know what you're going into the summer with. And, you know, you could start scouting them in a different way than if they're, you know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah, and I mean, you, like, look at the Pulisic deal that Chelsea did. You paid probably over the odds for what he's actually worth. But now you know that he's coming in.
Well, and that's where it's a little tricky. And it's, like, we're making suppositions because I am definitely in favor of Spurs are in a precarious enough situation. I should point out, compared to where we were a few years ago, precarious is all relative. But, you know, Spurs have this ability to, like, we're in a situation where we can cement our place as a Champions League team in England, potentially win a domestic cup, and if enough goes right, maybe challenge for a title. Like, over the next few years, assuming, like, Pochettino doesn't leave us for United, which is almost certainly happening. But we're in this position where we can do that. I think it's worth overspending a little bit, and I know it's easy to say because it's not my money and I'm not paying for a new stadium. But there are certain players, like, if you got to overspend to get, say, a Martial, who I don't think we really could have overspent to get him, or a Sancho or something, again, another player I don't think City was ever going to let us have, you know, I think it's time to, like, and again, you want to be smart about this, but it's worth overspending a little bit for some of these guys, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I mean...
I don't know if that's why we're not getting them. Like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's hard for us to say. Grealish was clearly not just it was somewhat a money issue, but it was clearly there's a lot of moving parts there. But who knows?
And I mean, like, I understand the club not dropping, you know, whatever, £70 million on someone like Ndombele. Or I understand that, you know.
But I would argue that's something you might want to think about. Like,
sure, you maybe you
especially
think
if
about
the wages
it.
Aren't going to be insane.
But I understand if you're like, look, you know, that's not the level that we're at right now with the stadium, with X, Y, and Z. Like, you know, if it was 35, 40 million pounds, like maybe it would be something that made sense. But, you know, all right, fine. And you know, you can't control Adrian Rabiot thinking that he's better than Tottenham Hotspur. Like that, what are you going to do about that? You can't control that, you know, Frankie de Jong wants to go to Barcelona. You're not going to beat Barcelona for players. But there were players out there that we were linked with, like Malcolm from Barcelona. There were players. Like,
okay, like I think that's the other problem here is some of these links I think were entirely driven by the player's agents. Like, I do not believe we ever seriously in for Malcolm.
Spurs do transfer business, though, is the thing. It's like okay, yeah, these links are driven by players' agents, but let's not pretend that the agents aren't how Daniel Levy signs people.
You're right,
like,
and we should be taking advantage of this. Department. I mean, we should be taking advantage of the fact that we have some thirsty agents out there. I think that's what we were trying to do with Rabiot.
And I mean, that's how Franco Baldini did business when he was here.
That's how we signed Luka Modric, I'm pretty sure. So
yeah, I mean, that's definitely so. Yeah, I don't know.
It's very tricky. It's so hard with, like, something is broken in the way Spurs are running transfers now. But at the same time, I have a hard time knowing exactly what that is, because I think there are times we're not willing to spend the money that we need to be willing to spend. I think there are times that we are reluctant to deal with agents to the extent that we maybe have to get players because the agents are a little sleazy. And there are times where we're not being inventive enough or identifying enough backup targets because the names we're all linked with, I mean, even if you get past some of our sort of moonshot ideas like Rabiot or, you know, Ndombele or whatever, like, we're linked with solid players, but we never seem to have a plan B, especially... which is distressing when you consider how easily it is for our transfer plans to go awry.
Well, I mean, that's kind of something that Joel pointed out on the blog this week, is that it looks like Spurs' identification of players is actually good. You know, you look at – Kaylee tweeted something out. Like, you look at midfielders that are, you know – pre-peak age, like younger than 24, 25, and they're making I don't remember what the numbers were, but they're making lots of progressive passes, lots of progressive runs with the ball, and also, like, you know, three or four tackles and interceptions per game in the top five divisions. And you were looking at players like T. Elemans, Florian Grillich, or however we're saying his name, Rabiot, and those were three guys that Spurs were linked with in this window. I mean, the other two were Giovanni Lo Celso and the kid from Arsenal with the stupid hair, Guendouzi. And it's just like, so our targeting of players, our identification of problems with the team seems to be okay, despite us not having scouts or analytics. The disconnect seems to be with Pochettino.
Maybe, that certainly seems to be an element of it. That he's extremely picky about who he wants on the team.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked, on the site and on this podcast, ad nauseum about the cult of Tottenham Hotspur, of Pochettino, and how important it is for players to buy into that. And if you don't buy into that, how you can fall afoul of Pochettino. Like, we had the whole Kabul Cabal, years ago, and then we have whatever clever thing we can come up with for what Janssen did. Pochettino is looking for very specific players with very specific attributes. And I think he trusts his own sort of nebulous sort of football friends a little bit more than he feels comfortable with Spurs' recruitment department.
Yes, and I think that's increased after signings like Nkudu and G and Janssen. Although Janssen, we get conflicting reports on whose idea that was, but...
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, Spurs' problem... And not that it's a problem, because by and large the club has been successful in the last few years, and we finished second, third, and look, we're only 2 points away from second right now. The problem with transfer signings is that there's just not a clear picture of how we're doing business. And I've always been one of those people, like, I am very much in favor of the director of football model. I'm very much in favor of, the sort of Lyon in Ligue 1, like, that is the model, that's the ultimate, like, you can have eight managers or seven managers in 8 years and win the league title every year, and as long as you're being consistent across how you want the club to look and what you want the players to be, you can be successful. And Spurs are opting to do it the other opposite way, where we are putting all of our trust in the manager and in his ability to coach players, develop them, and then sign the players that he wants. And we seem to be doing that at the expense of, a strong director of scouting, a strong football operations person, all this sort of stuff. And it's really now coming back to bite us when we've gone, like you said, a year without signing anybody. And by the time the summer rolls around, it'll be, 18 months without signing anybody?
I mean... I don't know, like I said, I don't know exactly where the problem is. Pochettino, I think, needs to lighten up about who he wants on the team and be willing to accept some warm bodies. I think Levy needs to, if we're in for a guy like Ndombele, he just needs to, suck it up and overpay a little bit. Like, this is obviously last year, but, if he has to give it to a bagman in an alley in Marseille, then God bless. But, it's like, we need to, I think we're being, in maybe multiple ways, I think we're being a little precious about our transfer process, and we just need to, I feel like we need to pay that extra money or swallow that extra bit of pride to just get some stuff done, because, it's not going to be as dire, hopefully it's not going to be as dire next year, because everyone won't be coming off an international tournament and be dead on their feet, but, this squad needs some reinforcement, especially if Pochettino really is in it for the long haul.
Yeah, and it's so weird, because you sit back and look at these last two kind of quiet windows, and I'm just begging for three or four shitty signings. Like, just let's sign another Ngier and Kudu, just so I have something to, like, hope for.
Give me Harry Winks' non-union Mexican counterpart.
Yeah, like, you know, like, you know, I'm not even asking for an Al Marone or, you know, some more expensive signing from somewhere. I'm just like, you know, just
Al Marone wasn't even that expensive. I'm questioning whether he's worth the money, but you know, he's not even that expensive by modern standards.
20 million is still
by modern standards, that's hardly anything. Like for,
yeah, it's less now, but I mean, it's still like that's still substantial by Spurs standards. You know, it's
we spent 40 yeah. million on a center back who's like 21 like a year ago. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, like you know, I don't understand why more big clubs aren't, you know, taking the Chelsea model and, like, snapping up youth players and just being like, all right, yep, we'll take, you know, the kid from Sunderland that wound up in France.
Well, I think they know that they're more likely to get games over there. Like, you know, I don't blame any young striker for not coming to Spurs. I don't blame any young striker for not coming to Tottenham. Like,
yeah, I just think, like, you know, those are the kind of deals that if you're a club, like, take some flyers on some lottery tickets. Like, well, there's no reason why you shouldn't be, you know, trying to find a lottery ticket every window. And you know what? If you hit on it once every four or five windows, it probably pays for itself. Like, well, you know, like how much does landing, you know, one Dele Alli, or not even a Dele Alli, a
Harry
Tom
Winks.
Carroll.
Imagine getting a Harry Winks out of, like...
A Harry Winks or a Tom Carroll or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, well, let's fucking calm down about that, but yeah.
But, I mean, we sold Tom Carroll for, like, I don't know, what did we sell him for, like, 8, 10 million, £10 million?
Something. I mean, yeah, some of it is about, like, recouping your money later on, but...
So, you know, like... You don't even need
Kyle
Walker
is a good example. We bought young Kyle Walker and young Danny Rose, and look what we got out of both of them, both on the front end and the back end. I mean,
well, not even Kyle Walker, because Kyle Walker was clearly a hit. But think about who else we bought at the same time as Kyle Walker. We bought Kyle Naughton at the same time, and Naughton clearly not as good a player. Certainly didn't have as much of an impact on Spurs, but he paid for himself essentially at the end of the day. By the time we get rid of him, I mean, you know, that's. You know, buy young English talent, like buy, you know, young players from League One and the Championship, and either loan them back or keep them in the team. And if they do something, they do something. And if not, they've been at Spurs for a year or two, and they're automatically more valuable. You know,
yeah. Assuming they don't get stuck in our dumb loan process, which we'll get to that in a minute, but.
Maybe it's just we're talking about it all hypothetically, so maybe it's time that we actually just address some actual specific things that happened.
Yes, let's.
Because we're gonna get bogged down, and I'm gonna get angrier and angrier.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So, we sent Nkudu on loan to Monaco, no obligation to buy, although I'm sure they can buy him if they want. Sterling got a loan to Sunderland, which is probably a good place for him to stretch his legs, but who the hell knows. Georgiou went to Levante. I don't think that guy's ever going to come back here. And Vincent Janssen went absolutely nowhere. So let's talk about Nkudu. I mean, I think this is about we want him to go somewhere and play and just get, you know, hopefully someone likes him enough to buy him. He's French, so, you know, hopefully this works out. Monaco's a bit of a fucking disaster area right now. I mean, do you think he's going to be able to impress there or not really?
I have no idea what Monaco are doing, honestly. Like, their transfer business, well, first of all, their manager kind of situation has been ridiculous. Getting rid of Jardim, hiring Henri, getting rid of Henri, hiring Jardim. Like, it's very Serie A type stuff going on there.
You hate to see it happen to Thierry, don't you? It's a real, real shame.
I honestly think he might be an okay manager, but
I am highly skeptical after how he handled that situation.
I just think Monaco is in a really weird situation where they're coming down off of having all that money.
I agree that Monaco's in a weird situation. I think that is he handled it in about the worst way possible.
Yeah, I think I really think that he should. Well, we're not talking about transfers now, but I think he should have taken the Bordeaux job instead of the Monaco job. But anyway, Monaco's window has been really weird. Like, you look at the players they brought in. Like, they bring in Naldo from Schalke, bring in Cesc Fabregas, Gelson Martins from Atletico, Adrian Silva from Leicester, and Kudu. All these guys on loan, except for, I think Naldo's a permanent transfer, and he's like 55 years old. But they're really, it just really looks like they're trying to get some guys in who have substantial experience to just keep them up, because they're 19th in the league right now. They're I think 4 or 5 points back from safety. Like, it's not good for Monaco right now. Like, they just need to win games, and I have no idea, based on what their squad is, if Nkudu will play. I don't know if he'll be good, because I just don't know what that team is going to look like.
So you don't think, I mean, you don't think he's going to get minutes?
I mean, he must be going to. Like,
how many times have we said that? I mean,
it just doesn't make sense to me as a loan signing if you're not going to play him at least a little. But, you know, the guys that they've got in his position are, I couldn't even tell you. I just,
So let's look back at Nkudu's highlights, where he looked kind of threatening in that one game against CSKA Moscow. And
he had an assist in the one game.
Yeah, so is he worth the transfer fee? Because he basically got us the 3 points that against Fulham or whoever the hell.
Yeah, Fulham, that's right. That's very good. He's one of those guys where I'm sure we'll somehow break even on him. Just take like a marginal loss on him, just because he we're getting rid of his wages and he's shown just
in
enough.
In theory, we're freeing up spots on the main roster. I mean,
yeah, and he's still young-ish. Like, someone will still, you know, be willing to pay 7.5, 8, 10 million pounds for him. But I mean, yeah, I don't know, like. I don't know what the deal is at Monaco. I don't know why. I mean, I know why he wasn't playing at Spurs. He was very clearly not, you know, one of the five or six best attacking midfielders that we had. Like, I mean, if you look at across the attacking band with everybody that we have, he just wasn't going to make the bench on a consistent basis. So him leaving makes the most sense, even with the injuries, because I just don't think he was ever really going to be a useful player for us and wasn't going to do anything more than spot start or make sub appearances every once in a while. So you might as well give him a fresh start, a different opportunity to actually play some games. But Monaco is such a mess, I have no idea what they're going to do.
Well, so let's compare him to another player at Spurs who doesn't get to play games. Nkudu was clearly on the outs at Tottenham. He wasn't on the outs at Tottenham like Vincent Janssen has been on the outs at Tottenham. Now, I don't think either of these guys impressed much for us. Janssen clearly had more of an opportunity. He got a fair amount of games that first year he was here with us. And then that dude has been, like, I mean, he has been super exiled, I mean, from this team since that season. I mean, he literally was not even given a squad number this year. And now it seems like we couldn't unload him today, despite links with Real Betis, and who else was he linked to? Schalke. There were a couple teams. There was some lower league.
West Ham?
West Ham. Well, every striker was linked with West Ham for reasons I don't fully understand. But yeah, he had a lot of links, and none of them really panned out because nobody seems to want him. Although it's hard to tell if nobody wants him or Spurs are just like trying to recoup. Like, I think I saw £15 million quoted somewhere, which is like, I think Daniel Levy needs to calm the fuck down and at least drop $5 million off that total.
I mean, look, we paid 17 for him when we bought him. So
yeah,
I mean,
but like. Look at this guy. This guy. So here's my point: is like Janssen clearly did something beyond just play bad, because Nkudu was just not good, but still was like he didn't get like double exiled. I mean, that guy was given a number. Pochettino would include him in the squad occasionally. I mean, Janssen couldn't even get that. Now I don't know if it's as simple as, you know, evidence that we have access to would suggest that it might have something to do with the fact that he turned down a loan in England last year, and we might have been super pissed with him about that, but like Janssen must have like farted in Pochettino's face or something, or had theories about who was responsible for 9/11 and shared them in the middle of training. I don't know what it is, but Jansen did something to really hack everybody off. And I don't understand why Spurs are being so precious. Clearly, they want someone to loan him with an obligation to buy. But, like, if I'm Spurs, like, shit, I just want to send him somewhere he's going to play. Because then somebody might be inclined to give you some money for this guy.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you know, this puts aside the fact that, you know, we could actually maybe use him right now.
Well, and I think that speaks to how, like, I know we talk about Pochettino having a cult. I don't think we've ever seen a guy get this on in the doghouse with Pochettino.
And it's so weird because
maybe Osvaldo at Southampton, but like
maybe, but like Jansen played like almost 40 games for Spurs that first season. He played in 38 games. Now, you know, a lot of the more sub appearances where he was just coming on and throwing his giant ass into people and drawing fouls.
But he was still getting minutes like throughout the season.
Right. And then whatever happened at the end of that season, who knows, but he was just done. And then he got sent off to Fenner, and then this year he got hurt by literally getting hurt at the, you know, at the wrong time in I believe it was July or August that prevented him from going on move this on loan this summer to I think Brighton were linked with him. There were maybe a couple other places.
Well, he's already turned down that loan. I mean,
yeah. And it's just like, I don't get it, because Jansen very much looked like someone who was the type of player that you should be taking a flyer on as your backup striker. Like he was amazing in his one season in the Eredivisie at AZ, and Spurs bought him. And to be Kane's backup, he was not bought to play two striker system. He was not bought to replace Kane. He was brought in to be the backup, and he didn't do a great job of that in his first season. And then just he never got the chance to do it again. And he's not. And now he's actually healthy. He's playing for the under 23 team. And he's still not getting an opportunity, and it's just it's baffling he did.
I think what's clear here is Levy. It's a mix of Levy's trying to get a certain amount of money for him, and Levy is trying to get him off the books entirely, one or the other. And if I'm Levy, I'm like, anybody is going to take him, and I think they'll actually. And if I thought that they would actually play him, it's like, yes, please go. Because your ability to sell him one way or another is going to be greatly improved if it's like, oh, look at this guy who could play top division football again.
And I mean, you know, after this, I think when he signed with Spurs, he signed a 4-year deal. So this is his third season at the club right now. So he's only got one more year left on his deal. So I understand, like, wanting to sell him now so maybe you don't have to take a hit because he's only got a year left on his contract over the summer. But, like you said, send him somewhere, let him get his value up, you know, even if they're not going to pay his wages or have a, you know, an option to buy or a requirement to buy at the end of the loan. Like, anything is better than him just sitting at Spurs and not playing. And I think some of the things we saw out of some of the guys that cover the Spurs beat for the local papers and the websites there in London are that they're still looking at sending him on loan to places that still have the window open.
So Russia or Portugal?
Yeah, it's like Russia, Portugal, China, the U.S. I think there was a bunch of others, but they were all like Eastern Bloc places where the competition is not as good. I think the best options are Russia or Portugal, really. Unless we're going to sell him for like $20 million to China, then, you know, that's fine.
I mean, I just think Spurs have to look at this like we looked at Paulinho's sale. Obviously, we got way more back for that guy than we ever thought we were going to get. But, you know, most of that sale was motivated by, let's get this dude off our books. Like, this is salary we don't have to pay. We're going to get some money back. You know, this thing was didn't work out for everybody. Who knows why? But, like, let's just get rid of this guy. And, you know, I just don't understand why we won't get rid of him. Like, open up a spot on the roster. Just stop paying him money. Like, that's the profit here. I'm not saying give him away for free, but come on.
And I mean, he's a senior pro. Like, he's not making an insubstantial amount of money. Like, we were talking about guys that we take lottery tickets and flyers on. Like, you could pay a couple of them with what you're paying Jansen.
You're absolutely right. You could pay Jack Clark and one other young dude out of Jansen's salary.
So I don't know. I don't get it.
I think they're being stubborn, and I think it's hard to move him because I think teams know they have Spurs over a barrel with this guy. You know what I mean? It's.
I mean, but there are tons of other teams that know that they have, you know, clubs over a barrel when it comes to transfers and like deals.
Not building a new stadium and have two scouts.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. You know, you got me there.
So we managed to keep this one going much longer than I thought we would, considering how little we had to talk about with transfer deadline day. But do you want to talk on the Mishy rumors before we leave?
I mean, yeah, it's either that or we talk about Newcastle. So yeah, let's talk about Mishy. Yeah.
So Mishy, like at the very end of the deadline, like 2 hours before the deadline day ended, the news came out that Mishy's representatives were trying to drive him towards Tottenham, and Chelsea were basically charging us a loan fee that was double what they were charging anyone else, which like really shouldn't shock anybody. These are not teams that enjoy dealing with each other. And frankly, they are literally in direct competition for the same thing this year. So, you know, putting aside how many eye gougings happen, that's not surprising. Apparently he's on 170K a week, or that's what he wants. I mean, I don't know if there's real locker room issues or that's just something that teams are using as leverage against him. But, you know, I just thought between Chelsea and Spurs working something out and us not really having a spot, I mean, I guess you figure it out. It's kind of like Martial, except Mishy's less flexible than Martial. Like, I don't know. I don't know why anyone thought this might actually happen.
But see, this is part of the romance of transfer deadline day, Greg. It's like, oh, we don't really need Mishy, but we could have Mishy, and that would be great.
Yes,
like,
but that's... I need anonymous, men living in their mother's basement writing cryptic posts about it on message boards for several days in advance. If we're going to do this, like, I don't want it 2 hours before the deadline. I want to read,
be teased a little first. I understand
exactly. I want to read about like Gotham City is nearing London or something. You know, some awful thing like that. You know, and then a really indignant reply when it doesn't actually happen.
Yeah, don't just rush us right to the climax. Like, you have to draw it out. No, I understand.
Exactly. I want to be treated nice. I want to be treated, you know, respectfully. I want a little bit of foreplay. Like, come on.
Yeah, light some candles. It's fine. No, this whole thing was honestly, Mishy's whole situation or all of Chelsea's striker situations is very weird to me. You know, you get rid of the actual good young striker that you have in Alvaro Morata. He goes to Atletico Madrid.
Okay, let's. Michael's not on this podcast. We don't have to pretend Morata's good.
Like, he's good. He is good.
No, he's not.
All right, whatever. But I mean, and then you've got all these other guys. You've got Tammy Abraham, who, you know, you're moving around on loan, who had Premier League interest but decided to stay where he was, and I think. And you know, you've got Giroud, who was drawing interest from all sorts of places. You've got, you're bringing in, Higuain, who's fat, but also who really works well with Sarri's system. And then you've got Mishy, who, you know, didn't play hardly at all on loan. And for whatever reason, after being really, really good on loan at Dortmund last year before getting injured, And he ends up going to Crystal Palace, which, I mean, for Crystal Palace, that's great. And, you know, now that frees him up to be able to actually play Zaha and Townsend in the positions that they want, and it gives them an actual center forward to play as a striker. But, yeah, I mean, it didn't make any sense for them to send him to Spurs. And...
Well, I would just like to point out that he had an opportunity to come to Spurs a couple of years ago where he might have actually gotten some real minutes.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like, There were tons of teams that made sense for him to go to. I mean, you know, West Ham, despite being linked with every striker ever, certainly did make sense. You know, that's a team that's probably not a bad fit for him. Everton are desperately in need of a striker, and for whatever reason, Chelsea weren't interested in loaning him there. They wanted a permanent deal. There seemed to be tons of people that were interested in Mishy, and rightfully so. But like you said, Chelsea just aren't going to deal with us. We're in direct competition. We're going for the same stuff. Chelsea probably see us in a weakened position right now because we don't have Harry Kane. And why would they make us less weak in the short term?
That's not even getting into the bad blood between the two clubs.
Right, absolutely. And that's just, you know, league positioning and relative strength and weaknesses, like not even taking into account that, you know, we're rivals and local rivals at that, and, you know, the Battle of the Bridge and all that sort of stuff. Like, yeah. But it was fun. We dared to dream for a second.
I suppose, and if there's a better way to sum up deadline day, I don't know what it is. So on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Brian, where can people find you on the internets?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y. Probably Mastodon, Tooting, at Brett Rainbow, and Tumblr and LinkedIn and stuff like that too.
You can find me at Skipjack0079, and of course, I'm on MySpace, I'm on YouTube as Brett Rainbow, so, you know, check me out there. For Brian and for myself and for Brett Rainbow and for all these other traitor turncoats who didn't join us tonight, I'm your host, Greg. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.